Welcome in to K-State Online. This is the KSO show. Mason Voth, Derek Young, Drew Galloway. Man, very rarely is it the three of us all together, but we're bringing the triumvirate today on a Thursday to talk a little bit about what happened between K-State and Baylor on Tuesday night, but really how it kind of factors into the Big 12 at large, because this league after the midweek kind of continues on its stretch of, I don't know that we should say unpredictability, because I think some of the results that we got this week were predictable. I think there were a lot of people that agreed that K-State had a good chance to beat Baylor. And I think some of the other outcomes, like, you know, Iowa State and BYU playing each other, they're kind of like the same team. I don't really fully buy into them being as good as what, like, the metrics say that they are, but they're fine. And Iowa State went on the road and lost to BYU. We saw KU take care of business against a really bad Oklahoma State team, but we did get one kind of surprising result, and it's starting to not really impact anything at the top, because Texas is currently kind of in a league of their own in the bottom portion of the Big 12. So a lot to talk about with the Big 12, but I guess we'll just start. Let's go back to Tuesday. K-State gets the win against Baylor, sets them up with the opportunity that with Houston's win then on Wednesday night, K-State is back into this tie for first place in the Big 12. It's only four games. There are 14 of them left. But through these four games and how they've played and who they've beaten now, where do your guys' opinion change on where K-State finishes in the Big 12? Because I think going into the non-con, I mean, you guys can say how you feel. I thought this was a team that you're probably looking at like seventh or eighth. And that, based on how they had played in some games, you probably thought that was being generous. But now, I don't think that this team is going to win the Big 12, but they certainly look like a team that are going to be in the upper portion of the league, and that's not something that seemed possible a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I would say I probably thought they were in that 8 to 10 range, you know, maybe a couple weeks ago. And now, especially because I just sent you my Big 12 power rankings, you know, 4 through 7 seems pretty similar, and I have Kansas State in that neighborhood. So, to be honest, I'm left a little unchanged, probably because I was a little bit more optimistic than others and kind of saw this coming a few weeks ago compared to what I was then to now. So it's a little bit, because I'll be honest with you, last week I think what Kansas State in our collective rankings ended up with 9th or 10th, I believe, in our Big 12 power rankings, but I added them the highest, I believe it's 7. And though they get that win over Baylor, I did my rankings. I just sent it to you, and I still have them 7. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little left unchanged.
Yeah, I thought K-State was probably in that like 8 to 10 range, where now 4 to 7 is probably possible. But kind of like DY said, like the way that the schedule kind of lined up, I don't really have much of an opinion, because you probably played one of the worst teams in the league at West Virginia, and you've took care of business at home, and then you lost to Texas Tech. So it's more like in a few weeks, I think you'll really see where K-State is when they go to Ames next week and to Houston next week, where that's kind of where you'll see, is this team really in that 4 to 7 range? Are they higher? Are they lower? But right now they're just kind of taking care of business, I think.
You better make sure you beat Oklahoma State, because
yes.
Because and that puts you in a great position. You're sitting there 4-1 in the Big 12, fortuitous schedule or not, that's a good place to be. And you probably need that security, because you could very well lose in both Ames and Houston, and no one's going to judge you for it, but you could very well do that.
Well, we talked about this on Sunday, and I just kind of said, like, K-State right now, they have the ability to play up with whoever else, but they also have the ability to play like Oklahoma State at times. And so your hope would just be that does not happen on Saturday when you actually play Oklahoma State, because they look pretty bad based on how that they played on Tuesday against KU, which, look, it's not like KU is an easy opponent to face, but they were at home, and KU has traditionally, under Bill Self, had a tricky time in Stillwater, and that just was not the case this year. It was a blowout from the jump. So that is that you got to take care of business against the bad teams. And K-State, while they've been doing that most of the time, they've shown that they can play at a level that would put them in a bad spot.
And look, the Pokes are not good. I'm not going to sit here and try to come up with a scenario and lie to anyone that they're...
Be careful doing this, because I did this in football season before K-State played Oklahoma State, and we know what happened.
That I'm not going to say that they're eons and eons better than what they have showed. I don't think that they are. But on top of being probably the worst team in the league so far this season, they've also been the unluckiest. Because, one, the schedule hasn't been ideal. And, two, like, they're the only team in this league, I believe, to have travel issues at each of the road games. Like, they're showing up like an hour before, and that's just not – I won't say it's not fair, because it's just the way the cookie crumbles, and you really can't change timings of games that much because you got another one 2 or 3 days later. But that's just – it's hard to do, right? Like, they literally were trying to land in Iowa in a blizzard and didn't get there to basically right at tip time, to the point that the Big 12 had to move back the tip time 3 hours. So – not that they would have won that game. They would not have, in my opinion. But that's just making a bad team look even worse.
Yeah, it's there. And, I mean, you look at it, and the teams that they've also played at home, I mean, I think they're the only team that's played Baylor and KU at home. So, like, they're that also getting unlucky in that situation. But, like, they're also just not a good basketball team. Their best win is Tulsa. Probably.
Yeah. And they've lost a few bye games as well. They're not good.
Yeah. No. It's another game that on the schedule, kind of like UCF, or so we thought, in West Virginia. It's more about K-State and not really anything Oklahoma State does, unless they just have some ungodly shooting night that we're not accustomed to. So,
unfortunately, it's like teams in other conferences where you don't get this often in the Big 12, but you're going to get it a couple times this year where you have to win, but it doesn't really help you. You have to win to avoid it hurting you, because it's almost a lose-lose situation. Now, lose-lose is kind of in the eye of the beholder. You win, you're not losing. I get that. But a win does not help you, but a loss is catastrophic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And honestly, like, the Big 12 is all about how you handle those situations where take care of your business at home or against the bad teams when you get it, and then maybe go and steal a game or two on the road, like, you know, K-State almost did against Texas Tech. And that's why I think, you know, we'll talk about next week down the road, but next week is going to be huge for K-State. You have two road games again in the week at Iowa State, at Houston. Look, Houston is still a really good basketball team, and they're going to be a much different animal at home than on the road right now as they continue to try and adjust to what it's like to play in the Big 12 and in road atmospheres. But I have seen really good Houston teams lose to much worse teams than K-State at home. Like, the opportunity will be there for K-State to go on the road twice next week and get at least one win. And if you're able to steal that, you put yourself in a really golden spot, because at that point, think of how we've talked about K-State and what they need to do to get in the NCAA tournament. If you can just win, you know, a second road game already in the Big 12 next week, and then what's left on your schedule is you got seven more, or I guess at that point it'd be six more Big 12 home games, and you just take care of your business there, you're going to be fine. You're going to be able to get in. So I think if you show the ability to go on the road and steal a win, like, you know, some teams have done already, and K-State was, you know, an extra step away from doing in Lubbock last weekend, I think that's going to be a pretty significant deal.
What helps is, I don't know that they're all quad one technically according to the net right now, but I think they will all eventually be. But what helps is, I think you're going to have five quad one games at home, mm-hmm. against Oklahoma, Kansas, BYU, Iowa State, and probably TCU, although I don't think they're quite there yet, but probably TCU at the end. Like, Kansas State's 26-2 at home under Jerome Tang. You got to think, even getting that to 3-3. Now, I think they'll get more than three wins out of that bunch, but even three, you go 3-2, which would probably feel disappointing, but you go 3-2. You add in the one you already have, quad one, and Baylor. That gives you a 4. And if Villanova and LSU somehow kind of comes up into the quad one territory where both are close, that gives you 5 quad one wins. And you only have to steal one on the road to get to 6. Like, it feels doable, very doable, especially because Kansas State's so good at home. And like I said, I kind of gave you worst case scenario there, I think, with 3-2 at home against those 5 teams.
Yeah. K-State currently, no, all they have left are quad one or quad 3-4. I guess they do have the game against TCU at home is a quad two, but outside of that, they filled up the quad two box, and it's just a lot of big game opportunities for them to go and rack up some significant wins.
Yeah. And because this is technically a quad three game against Oklahoma State, right? Which it's at home, so you feel okay about getting that. You like you shouldn't lose to Oklahoma State at home. The problem for the teams are going to have is like when they and Kansas State's already avoided one of these is when they go to Stillwater and Morgantown, and where these games become like a dangerous quad three game. Like Kansas State's already avoided that at West Virginia, but other teams are going to have to do the same thing. Yeah. Kansas State still has to go to Stillwater.
You feel a lot better for K-State already having one of those past them and getting the win as opposed to going later in the year where you feel like, hey, we got to have it here. And you're banking on it being a win, but, you know, you never know what can happen in those situations. So it's good that they got it, and we'll see. Let's roll on here. Before we dive into the Big 12 at large and what went down this week and how everything's shaping up, I got a question for both of you because I think we've, you know, it's been covered from time to time. We know how good a guy like Cam Carter is playing, and he had a strong night even with having to sit with foul trouble at various points. And then Arthur Kaluma came through, and there seems to be a little bit more that he can unlock with his game on a consistent basis. So when all is said and done, who do you think – because I think K-State, the way guys are playing right now, the way things are setting up, I do think that they end up with somebody on the All-Big 12 first team at the end of the year. At this point in time, who would you guys say that is, Arthur Kaluma or Cam Carter?
I'll say Arthur Kaluma because he shoots more. Because if he shoots more, then, boy, those numbers could really expand already on top of what they already are. I think Cam's going – look, I love Cam Carter, and I think he's still – he's going to be a great player for Kansas State throughout the season. I'm not saying that he's going to become – a marginal player. That's not the case. He's going to be one of the most important players for Kansas State no matter what. But they are asking so much out of him defensively that I think his offensive numbers are going to stagnate or, you know, or remain the same or even like dip even a little bit. Like, because I think Cam Carter's a better shooter than what his numbers are indicating right now. But it's kind of like what some of those Bruce teams were, right? They play or they have to play so hard on defense to get the job done that it impacts them a little bit offensively. And I think that's what Cam Carter is going to endure.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's probably going to be Arthur Kaluma if it's going to be one of the two, because he's one of the, actually the only one of like, I think 3 or 4 players that's top 15 in the Big 12 in points and rebounds. And the way that he's been rebounding this entire season, he's going to be close to being in the top 3. Hunter Dickinson's going to be tough to beat at the number one spot, but Kaluma's, I think, like 4 or 5 rebounds away from being the number 2 rebounder in the Big 12. If he keeps scoring and shoots a little bit more, because it's like we've talked about the last few Sundays, when he shoots the ball, it looks pretty and it's gone in and it feels kind of automatic, kind of like where Keontae Johnson got last year from 3, where you feel really good when he winds up and gets ready to shoot. So you want him to take another step scoring. If he takes another step scoring, he's going to be on the first team.
Yeah. I think like right now people would probably say Cam Carter just because of the numbers, but I think with the way Arthur Kaluma is playing, I think the numbers are only going to get better. That at least would be the hope and the expectation, where you mentioned the shooting, like he's shooting almost 40% from 3 this year on over 4 attempts a game. Like, this is kind of the crazy thing about Kaluma is you look at it, His first two seasons at Creighton, he was at 26.5% and then 31% last year. And that was on like, you know, 3.6 attempts per game. He's up that this year and he's exponentially shot up his percentage. And he probably needs to shoot more out there for K-State for them to get the offense kind of going how they want. and Fan would be here telling us he needs to shoot more threes instead of 2-point jumpers or whatever the issue is. But
and apparently all from the left wing. I don't know what this going on.
Yes.
But just this team makes everything from the left wing. They go to the right wing and it's like night and day. I don't understand
I think they need a practice by putting like walls up in the ice center on the left wing so nobody can actually shoot from there in practice. So they are forced to get better at other areas of the floor scoring the basketball.
If you told me as a team they were shooting 75% from three from the left wing, I would not bat an eye.
You're like, yeah, that seems right. And then they're, you know, 1% from every other spot on the floor.
Well, what's crazy to me about Kaluma, like you just kind of hit on it, like the thing that I was told from Creighton people and like Big East fans is like Arthur Kaluma will drive you crazy sometimes because he's a ball stopper. And I texted them after the Baylor game on Tuesday night, and I said, my problem is that Kaluma doesn't shoot enough.
Yeah.
Like, he needs to be taking more threes and getting the ball more, I think, in late-game situations, because I think that he's the one that I feel the most comfortable with that could create his own.
When he's not right, he is a ball stopper, though, I will say.
Yes.
That's true. That is true. We'll see on the Cam Carter side of things how it goes. I'm with you, D.Y., the shooting, look, he's never been like some overboard great shooter in his now three seasons, but he was 33% last year. I kind of nitpicked the 33% last year where I was like, that's not indicative of really how it goes. Like, that's using average in the truest sense of the word, where it's like for the whole season, Cam Carter did average 33% shooting, but it's like, I'm going to go 1 of 8 this game and then 6 of 7 this game, and then I'm going to have 3 straight games where I do nothing from you. I'd like just a little more consistency from Cam Carter. And it's the same thing that we're asking of Tyler Perry, where you don't have to knock down every single shot you take, but if you can make at least, you know, 1 in each half for us, that would go a long way for the way this K-State team is playing right now defensively, because the games are so tight and lower scoring compared to the rest of the league that, you know, 6 extra points in a game can be the difference in you know, losing by 1 in Lubbock or coming out on top with a big road win in this league. So I think Cam Carter still has the chance, and he's going to have the scoring numbers to make the case. But I think to actually get it done and to see him there on the first team All Big 12, he's going to have to improve the shooting, which, as D.Y. has alluded to, that may just be really tough to do with as much as he's having to do on defense for this team.
And my bold prediction would be that Tyler Perry could slide his name into the conversation here, because look, the criticism or the questions about his shooting are warranted at this point because his numbers have dipped, but that's also, I don't know if ignoring is the right word, but not at least qualifying it to the point where we have to realize, even as people that are covering Kansas State and fans that are watching and casting aspersions as well, realize the adjustment that Tyler Perry's had to make from North Texas to Kansas State. And I don't just mean the competition, because I don't think it's too much of that. I think it's the radically quicker, no, not that Kansas State's being as operating at a very, very high pace. They're not breakneck, but it's still considerably faster than what they played in North Texas. And he's having to do it all while being on the ball much more than he has his entire career. And now lately, that's upped even more. I mean, the guy just played 43 minutes on the ball against one of the best teams in the country. I mean, 43 minutes. Like, you play 35 minutes on the ball, exclusively on the ball, and you're going to get worn out to some level, especially if you guys are playing tough defense and you're playing it still, you know, a greater pace than you have your entire career, which was at North Texas. They were one of the slowest offenses. So I think while it's warranted to question the numbers a little bit from a shooting perspective from him, I still think we're almost in an adjustment period, or we were just about ready to come out of it. And then he has to, I mean, he's the only point guard available the last 2 or 3 games,
yeah,
because Dave Ames is not, and Quez Glover is hurt. And look, you put someone on the ball that much, you play him that many minutes, it's going to take a toll. And the toll that it's taken is on his shooting numbers, because it hasn't affected his ability to help Kansas State win. And at the end of the day, that's the most important thing. And he deserves credit for that, because I think he's turned into a better defensive player than most were expecting. He had four steals against Baylor.
If you look at those numbers, so you can take the first, and I'm trying to think how many games that would be there for K-State. If you take the first nine games of the season, he only had one game where he had more than two steals, and it was the USC game. He had four of them. And look, defense is more than just getting steals, but this kind of highlights what he's doing. Since the LSU game, so that would be K-State's last eight games, he has four games where he's recorded at least three steals for the Cats. Three against LSU, four against Wichita State, three against Chicago State, and four against Baylor. And that seems to me to be something that's indicative of how the defense is playing, where he's playing smarter on defense. He's putting himself in a better position, because if you go and look, like, he's on track to be, if not similar, but maybe better than what his steal numbers were last year, in terms of volume in certain games at North Texas. And that is something he has to adjust to right now, where offensively, I don't know how much of an adjustment he's having to make with his game because of the competition that he's facing. In the Big 12 and playing more power competition, you do have to adjust to, okay, these guys are quicker, these guys are more skilled. Like, all of these things make a difference. And it's wild to go and look at what his North Texas career was, because I went and looked last year. He didn't play a single non-con game against a Power 6 school. And the year prior, he played two of them. He played KU and Miami. So it's not like he had crazy experience playing Power 6 competition before this year. I think in total, if you count NCAA tournament and NIT with the two games his first year at North Texas, he's played five games against Power 6 competition before this season. And, I mean, you think about what K-State then has already faced this year, where obviously they've played four Big 12 games now, but they face Nebraska, LSU, Villanova, Miami, Providence, and USC. Like, he's already eclipsed this season, and we still have 14 games left in the regular season, how many Power 6 schools he faced at North Texas. So he's had to adjust, and he's starting to do it really well on that defensive end. And, like, this is where I'll give credit to him. And, you know, I would love to see him shoot better. I love shooters. That is the thing that, you know, I think makes basketball go round. He's not doing it well right now. He needs to get better there. That is still, to me, his best value to this team. But he has found ways to supplement his deficiencies with shooting the basketball by being a, for the most part, good leader when handling the ball. And defensively, he's really stepped up, and he fits right in with what K-State's doing defensively. And honestly, is probably one of the guys making the biggest, you know, charge to lead by example on that end. So Tyler Perry sneaking his way in. It may be tough just because he's so far behind, you know, shooting wise. And I think that those numbers have to be there, but he could do it, especially if they factor in, you know, how good he's been defensively. And I mean, How many all, like, defensive team guys is K-State going to have this year? I mean, are they going to end up with, like, three?
Well, they should have Carter and Gasan. Probably two.
Carter and Gasan.
For Perry, look, you'd like him to shoot better. I think he will. And if he and K-State would be so much better if he can kind of find his rhythm there. But I could still make an argument, and I know Kalumar and Carter are ahead numbers wise and probably for some of these distinctions, but I could still make an argument that the kid Perry is the MVP of this team right now, just because they would be nowhere without him, because of what's being asked of him and what he is still providing. Like, I get, you look at the numbers and you're like, you know, I get it, but like I said, improved defense. And I think it's the best he's rebounded and the best assist numbers of his entire career as well. So they are fortunate still to what he, and I get it's hard for some too, because they're, you know, you just saw Marquise Noel last year and this is two different games, but still what he is doing is a lot for Kansas State. And we've talked about it before, and obviously some of those late games, I mean, Kansas State's won a lot of close games late, right? And especially, you know, another 5-0 in overtime, and you have some other ones that were came down to, you know, the last possession in regulation. But a lot of those times, And if we're paying attention, really, it's Tyler Perry making a play here or there. Like, right? I mean, he's one of the most clutch players, too. I just don't want us to dwell on just the shooting numbers because he's a lot more than that this year.
You can see his value when he comes off the floor that they look so disorganized. And like, this kind of goes back to your point of how much he's playing. He's played more than 40 minutes, almost double the amount than he's played less than 35.
Yeah, I think I saw a number two. He's almost played 93% of the minutes that Kansas State has in Big 12 games right now. I think it's 92.7.
And when he's off the floor, they look disjointed on offense.
That's why he's so valuable right now and why I think he's taking too many arrows, because he's literally the only point guard. And to do it that well for 43 minutes, I think, deserves credit.
Yeah, no, he's doing a lot more, and he's in a tough spot with how many minutes he's being asked to play, the role that he's being asked to play, and he's doing almost as well as he can there. It's just the one thing that is suffering currently is the shooting. So that will have to improve and get a little bit better, but you know, we'll see how it goes.
And the shooting's probably being impacted by all of that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And like, it's almost, and then this is just where he's amazing to have too, is at the end of the game, like outside of the one miss that he had at the end of regulation against Baylor, every time he gets to the free throw line, you think that it's just automatic.
Number one free throw shooter in the Big 12 right now, right?
Yeah, I think I wrote in one of the things before the Texas Tech game, or maybe it was the West Virginia game, but K-State, I think right now, is on pace to have the Big 12 leader in free throw shooting for three straight years. Nigel Pack, Marquise Noel, and now Tyler Perry. So,
I believe Cam Carter's in the top five right now.
That, you know, it's good to have Cam Carter be in the mix there and be given a good
go. That shows you that Cam's three-point shooting and Tyler's three-point shooting is a little bit of a mirage right now because of how well they are at the free throw line.
Yeah. Well, let's roll on here and take a look around the rest of the Big 12, because this is what the carnage looks like after the midweek. TCU gets in the top 25. They're getting respect. We're talking about, at least I am, hey, they should be 3-0 and lead this league with three top 10 wins because they got robbed in Lawrence. And then they lose in overtime at Cincinnati, who we have to start taking a little more seriously now because of the results that they've produced to get their two wins. K-State, they also go to overtime on Tuesday night. They get a big win against Baylor, their most significant win of the season at this point. We mentioned KU taking down Oklahoma State. And then BYU blew out Iowa State in the second half. It was tight at the half. The Clones were only down four, but they got behind quickly in the second, and BYU cruised to a comfortable home win. And then last night, two games that seemed to go the way people projected. OU handles West Virginia easily. Houston blows out Texas Tech. But Texas, oh, the disaster that just keeps on giving. They lose 77-71 to UCF. What an outcome. I was looking hard to try and find any way to watch the Longhorn Network to see the collapse in person, so I settled to listening on radio. Boy, I absolutely cannot get enough of Texas losing that game to UCF after leading. I think they got up 15-2 at one point to start the game, and they led by 16 at one point. And it got all that much more better after the game when you learned that Rodney Terry did not handle losing that game well at all. He's crying about the horns down being thrown his way by UCF players, and then he's cussing them out in the handshake line afterwards. It was the best result of the week, in my opinion, and that includes watching my alma mater beat Baylor, a top 10 team at home.
Yeah, I think in the last 17 minutes of the game, UCF outscored Texas by 21 because they went from down 15 to winning by 6. So I think they outscored them by 21 the last 15 minutes of the game. Ooh, that's about as, you know, doomsday as you could point out for Texas, because one, you're doing it at home. Two, it's to UCF in a game that you have to have. And three, then you have your head coach just make a butt of himself, right? Afterwards, not once, but twice, right? He doubled down in the press conference too. So, and to be honest, you know, one of my first reactions to, I guess we'll go into the the handshake line thing. For one of my reactions at first is like, if I'm Johnny Dawkins, that pisses me off. Like, I don't need you to scold my players. That's how I feel.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Like, I texted some people and I said it's more classless, I think, to go after the UCF players and not let Johnny Dawkins just handle it than them doing the horns down when they weren't doing it to the Texas players. Like, grow up. You lost. You want to stop it? Don't lose.
Yeah. And some of this is a product too, if I think, well, not a product. I'll just point out what I think is basically my thoughts being validated before. I'll let Mason talk about the horns down and Ronnie Terry crying. But for me, like, this season is validating what I thought. Like, I understand why Texas may have thought that they were backed into a corner and probably had to hire Rodney Terry based off last year's results. You kind of look like stupid maybe if you don't. So you got to give them a year maybe or another year. I get it. But nothing short of last year's spectacular finish somehow, short of anything else, like everything in Ronnie Terry's career up to that point suggested that he should not be the Texas head coach. And now this is bearing itself out.
You know, I'll also throw in that last year when they beat K-State at home, there were Texas players making fun of the Wabash, and that wasn't considered classless by Rodney Terry. But the thorns down, that's where he draws the line.
Oh, trust me. I'm very close to going through and watching highlights from every Texas win last year and seeing how their players conducted themselves. Because I can only imagine that those guys – beat KU in Austin the last game of the regular season last year and handled it with immense amounts of class. I can't imagine that there was anything that went on there that wasn't disparaging. Look, I'll start with what DY was saying, because I agree with it totally. And I thought this last year, like, go ahead and hire Rodney Terry. Make him your guy. Because, look, I just sat around my very first year in Wichita on the radio. Greg Marshall gets fired 3 weeks before the season. Honestly, very similar deal to what happened with Chris Beard, where there are allegations of physical abuse, and you're like, okay, this guy, even if, you know, he's not going to be criminally charged, like, we can't have this dude leading our program. Like, there's too much smoke. He's not the, you know, he's not probably the best guy. Like, let's separate here. You bring in an interim coach, and guess what happened to Wichita State? They just kept winning games in the COVID year, and they had to hire Isaac Brown, who was wildly underqualified for that job, and they were terrible the next 2 years. And that's the same thing for Rodney Terry, where he made one NCAA tournament at Fresno State. He was terrible at UTEP. Oh, by the way, his best season at UTEP was the COVID year when he went 12-12. So, like, this guy has no business being the head coach at Texas. And it's playing out right now that they're 1-3 in the Big 12. As for the horns down thing, dude, like, suck it the heck up, man. Like, do you understand? This is a message to everybody affiliated with Texas. The more you cry about this stuff, the more people are going to do it. Horns down would have died if you had just, like, not acknowledged it or made it as big of a deal as it is. But you freak out about it. And, you know, then we have the whole every year the officiating guy at Big 12 Media Days gets asked, is horns down a penalty? It's like, it's pretty darn simple to explain how this works. If you go up to a Texas player after scoring a touchdown and you just horns down right into his eyeballs, they're going to flag you for that. But they would do that if you went up to him and gave him like a thumbs up afterwards. It's not the hand signal. It's that you're up in this guy's face. If you score a touchdown and you go and flash a horns down at a random student or a cheerleader, nobody gives a crap. Like, they're not a part of the game. Taunt them all you want. Like, I'm team UCF here. I hope Johnny Dawkins didn't even address this with his team. If Johnny Dawkins does apologize or address it, he is soft, in my opinion, which that might be the case anyways. But, like, Rodney Terry, just shut up and focus on your own team's problems, dude, because you've got way more talent there than what has been reflective in your play. So I don't know what to expect from all this, but that was a terrible look by him last night, the way he handled it.
I haven't seen kids say cry once when people do the imitate or mimic the Wabash thing once they beat Kent State. I haven't seen kids say cry. I didn't see K-State cry when Fred Hoiberg in Nebraska went into the locker room after spanking the Wildcats in Manhattan and played the lowdown by Lil Baby, right? I mean, that was very much in Kansas State's face. I haven't seen West Virginia cry when every time they lose a game of football or basketball, everybody plays Country Roads in a locker room.
Yep. That's true. Yeah. I have not heard West Virginia complain one time after a game and been like, you know, I thought it was pretty classless that they played a little John Denver after beating our butts here.
It's and like, every team does it. Like, we've heard Kansas State play Country Roads in the locker room in Morgantown. Yes.
And the lady there was like, like, this happens after every game they lose. It happens there, and I am yet to hear them freak out about it. So it's a weird Texas thing, and this is just another example of why Texas is so unlikable and why people are just, you know, sick of their act, because they're way less important than they think they are. And then they act like this is some heinous crime that's been, acted against them. So I don't know. We'll see.
If they're offended by that, though, the SEC is going to just tear them apart.
Yeah. I mean, the SEC, they're going to throw horns down at you and say a bunch of terrible things while they're doing it. At least it's nonverbal communication right here. Breaking news. We found a picture of Rodney Terry. Do we think he's got any comment on this?
No.
I can't stand him. I think he is fake, and I think we saw that last night where he came out and was all against that. Other thoughts on the Big 12 and the week that was, outside of Texas falling on their face at home against UCF after having a 16-point lead, which I mentioned earlier to you guys. UCF, in both Big 12 wins this year against KU and Texas, they've trailed by 16 points in those games and somehow have come back to win. I would probably float out there. I mean, outside of K-State and Baylor, this was kind of just a bad week for games, because like Houston and Tech was kind of due for a loss maybe, and Houston was looking for revenge, and then KU played a terrible opponent, OU played a terrible opponent, and the other games, they just kind of happened. I'm not sure many people thought
their games just happened.
Yeah, I got four things probably that we said, and I'll go one by one, and we can discuss each one. The first one, and I know you'll probably disagree, especially Macy, because I think he had KU first in his inaugural or last week's Big 12 power rankings. But I think despite, in general, I think we could probably all agree here, we'll see, in spite of losing those two road games, which I think is still, like Mason said, Houston acclimating a bit to the Big 12 and those environments because they're going to be tough. I still think neutral site, like, maybe not neutral site, just in general, I still think Houston, one, is really, really good. And two, I think I like them more than everyone else in the Big 12 still. I do.
Yeah, I think that I trust Houston probably the most. Like
the only two that, you know, like are closely touching Houston right now is Baylor and KU. But look, I think this KU team is a lot more flawed than they typically are, especially on the defensive end, because Hunter Dickinson's great on offense, but boy, it's hard to navigate him around him on the defensive end. The only thing that's kind of KU's saving grace right now is Kevin McCullough's having a career season. That's literally their saving grace, because Marco Jackson is really bad and Hunter Dickinson is a liability on the defensive end. So that's why I got to go Houston over KU still. And Baylor, I really, really like Baylor. They probably have the most upside of those three teams, to be quite honest. They are just not playing good defense, and their three-point shooting has regressed so much that they're struggling in every game right now.
The McCullough thing is wild. I mean, he's taken a massive jump in his shooting, and his scoring has almost doubled from his best season ever. So they are fortunate to be getting that version. I'll say this. If everybody went out onto the floor with blank uniforms and they played in the same building, Houston would be my pick for the best team in the league. But I've been on this earth 25 years. I've seen a lot of Big 12 basketball. I know the history of how this plays out. And I know at the end of the day, Kansas is going to win the Big 12. So they're going to have to lose like five more games until they get knocked off my pedestal is number one in the Big 12 rankings. Because, look, I agree. They are a totally flawed team. This is on paper, and in the way that they've played, they look like one of the worst Kansas teams that I've seen. But I just know how this thing works out, and until they, you know, they kind of get proven to go the opposite way. We'll see how it goes. And Houston's two losses last week kind of shook me a little bit. So we'll see if they can get real hot. And, you know, it's going to take more than just beating the crap out of Texas Tech to get me to come around on you being the best team in the league.
I will say, though, the road games for KU that are left, I mean, it's at West Virginia, it's at Iowa State, at K-State, at Texas Tech, at OU, at Baylor, at Houston.
Like, oh, I went to bat for KU when the schedule came out. They were given a pretty tough hand scheduling-wise this year because they have to play two games against Baylor, two games against K-State, and two games against Houston. I'm not sure that there's another team that's like that. And you throw into the fact now that we know what we know about OU, they have to play Oklahoma twice this year. And so you already played a top 10 OU team. They're 15 right now. Like they got handed a pretty tough schedule. I don't feel bad for them, but
frauds. Oklahoma's fraud.
You're preaching the choir here. I think OU, BYU, Iowa State, I think a lot of the things that favor them is a little fraudulent. They're maybe better than I initially anticipated, but they're not anywhere near the level of unbeatable or, you know, overly impressive team.
I like Iowa State the most out of those three you mentioned, I think, still.
Yeah, I agree.
I think I took the Clones over BYU and the Sooners right now. I would. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of those teams are jumbled up there. That's one of my takeaways. My next one, and we'll try to rip through these. And maybe this one's just a me thing because I was the one totally wrong on this team. I had them 10th in my power rankings last week, was totally different than you guys. And I was proved to be completely wrong because of the way they're playing. Obviously, they got screwed in Lawrence. The Cincinnati loss aside, I'm a lot higher on TCU right now than I was even 10 days ago. They are a tough outfit. And I think the next few weeks could prove that out because, look, TCU can win their next two games still too as well because they're home against Iowa State. Tough game, but they're the home team, and then they go to Stillwater. So and then a week after that, they get Texas Tech at home and Texas at home. So the Frogs got a nice little stretch coming up here to where they could really do some damage and put themselves into the discussion to being the Big 12 champion, in my opinion. I think assuming disaster does not happen, I think TCU is good enough to compete for the Big 12 title.
Emmanuel Miller becoming a legitimately like really good Big 12 player. It's kind of wild.
Well, TCU, I am in the same boat as DY. I think that from what I've seen, like the opportunity is there for them. The Cincinnati loss kind of gives me some pause just because like I get it. It's a road game. The Big 12 is unpredictable and all this. And Cincinnati is better than I've given them credit for. I mean, I saw a lot of Cincinnati in the American, and you know I like Wes Miller, but like the teams really hadn't come through that much. They'd been pretty disappointing, but he was able to bring in some different talent this year, and he's made them a truly competitive Big 12 team. So maybe I shouldn't totally write TCU off, but I think they're going to have to go out and prove themselves a little bit more. I mean, like DY said, they've got a nice little cushion here where you get a home game against Iowa State this weekend and then a road game at Oklahoma State. It's just going to be telling how they handle when they go to Waco and then they come back against Texas Tech. Like those are going to be kind of fascinating. And we know that like the Tech and the TCU people, they don't seem to get along for whatever reason. So we'll see how it ends up working out.
Yeah. Part of that's for Texas Tech really tries to claim Dallas, even though they're really far away. I think it's because
they're hours away.
I know. I think it's because they have a large alumni still packed into there, but I think TCU gets offended. It's weird.
Yeah.
Obviously you got Baylor there. It's another one, but my next one, as we're ripping through these, was kind of what you alluded to. Cincinnati's a lot better than I thought too. Mm. We thought it was a good win or good luck. Not a good loss. There's never such thing as a good loss. But you lose to Texas at home on a Max Aismith miracle shot. You're like, okay, so today's probably pretty good. Mm-hmm. Looking back on it, it's like, man, you should have beat Texas at home probably. A really good – you beat BYU on the road by double digits. You beat TCU, we already said. They almost beat the Baylor in Waco. I think Cincinnati's pretty solid, and the next four games are really going to tell us a lot. The home against Oklahoma coming up on Saturday is a big game for the Bearcats, and they could really – prove something there if they can win that, because that's a winnable game because it is at home. Yeah. Obviously, you don't expect them to win at KU, but the next two they can get after that, even because you host UCF and you go to West Virginia. So they could win three of their next four, and all of a sudden you're talking about a team that's above 500 in the Big 12 in their first year. And I don't think anyone would have thought that. So I think Cincinnati is better than I thought. And now they're heading into a stretch where I think they can make some movement if they play to their ceiling. Now they could ultimately collapse and be who we thought they were too, but I wouldn't ignore what Cincinnati is doing right now.
No, I mean, they almost beat Baylor. They should have beat Texas.
Yeah.
Like, they're a pretty solid squad. Like, I really like Wes Miller, so, like, I'm happy that they found some success. And they're just an interesting team because, like, before conference play started, I'm not sure I could have told you one player on their entire roster.
Jizzle James.
Okay. Was he good? I don't even know.
No. Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, no.
He's not very good.
He was a highly sought after recruit. Edrin James's son. That's Ooh. Not even a joke. He really is Edrin's boy.
Edrin's boy. Yeah.
He was the number 73 recruit in the class of 2023. So he's the real deal in terms of, you know, recruiting prowess and everything. But I mean, yeah, I look at them. I'm with you. I could not have told you anybody on their roster. I guess a CJ Frederick, you know, who transferred from Kentucky
and Iowa, and
barely, you know, did anything for Kentucky last year. But outside of that, I really couldn't have done much for you. John Newman's like the one holdover that I got to actually see play, like when I would cover Wichita State a little bit. So I guess he's there. But once they took away, like, some of the other guys, there were like dudes with like crazy blonde hair and stuff. I'd be like, ah, okay, these guys, I don't know anybody now. But I Cincinnati deserves respect. Their two Big 12 losses are by 4 points. The one against Texas, as we talked about, Max Asemus probably traveled on it, and also it took like two bounces and then fell through. So there really is a chance that like Cincinnati's the real deal, and that's gonna be a fascinating game because K-State goes there, I think. After that, they'll have just two games left. So very end of the season, first weekend in March, K-State is in Cincinnati. That's going to be significant because both those teams might be fighting for NCAA tournament spots.
And lastly, I got one more thing. But most disappointing team, I think we've already covered, that's Texas, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're
not really close either.
Yeah, I don't think there's even another contender, is there?
No.
No, not at all. I mean, here's a look at the Big 12 standings right now. But it's very clearly Texas because West Virginia and Oklahoma State is predictable. Maybe I'm a little shocked that Oklahoma State is this bad just because, like, Mike Boynton's at least been able to get through the non-con without me thinking he's a total fraud. That's not been the case this time around. And West Virginia, we knew what the situation was going to be. Outside of that, everybody else has been, you know, fairly impressive to me and probably played above expectations to this stage. Texas is the only possible answer here because they should not be 1-3 in Big 12 play given the schedule that they've played so far. If they had gone out and they, you know, if they had to play TCU's schedule to start or something else, I would have been like, okay, I get it a little bit. Like, you're telling yourself as a fan, yeah, we're 1-3, but like, look at it. The schedule's going to get easier. If you're Texas, like, I can't tell you that things are going to get easier for you now because it's Baylor this weekend. It's at OU. It's at BYU, Houston at home, at TCU, then Iowa State at home. Their next six games are against top 25 opponents, three of them being on the road. Like, it's not easier for you right now. And after that stretch, you get a little bit of a breather. You play West Virginia at home, and then they finish out the year at Houston, K-State on Big Monday, at KU, at Tech, another breather, Oklahoma State at home, and then at Baylor and a home game against Oklahoma. The fact that you've already botched games with West Virginia and UCF, Texas, you're already out of the Big 12 title race. Now, I don't think they were going to win it anyways, but you are out of it at this point in time. Now you're really looking around and saying, we're going to go from maybe being comfortably in the NCAA tournament to this team could theoretically end up on the bubble, and it wouldn't surprise me. And somebody's going to have to get left out of the NCAA tournament in the Big 12 outside of just the two crap schools and probably UCF. Texas right now is candidate number one for that to happen.
They're out right now, I think.
They should be out right now. They've only beat one team on the top 75 of the net.
Man, not and good. Then
the last thing for me was, like, we talked about it, but, like, 4 through 7, it was very tough to differentiate when I'm doing these power rankings. And for me, that was TCU, Iowa State, Texas Tech, and K-State. Those four are very similar right now.
Yeah.
Now, ultimately, there might be a little separation between TCU and the other three. That's fair. But it's still tight. I mean, because I think there's tiers, right? You got Houston, Baylor, Kansas. However way you want to order those three. And then I think you have TCU, Iowa State, Tech, K-State. Now, some might want to group Cincinnati, Oklahoma, and BYU in there too. I don't.
The middle of the league is just so similar, and it's going to come down to, did you have a good night shooting?
Yeah.
Are you the home team? Like, those are the two things with the middle of the league that you're going to see. Like, that's who's going to win.
Yeah. Is TCU going to have a home court this year? They haven't yet. So,
I mean, it's a good question. I think they can get a little rowdy, but how rowdy can, you know.
Yeah, that's what makes it trickier for the Frogs, right? Like, regardless of how special or good they might end up being, they're not going to have the home tough environment that, like, Iowa State, Tech, and K-State will.
Yeah, that is going to kind of hold them back a little bit. All right, real quick as we close out, let's focus on the four teams that are currently tied at the top. Baylor, Tech, K-State, and KU. Two of those we think are there to stay, and we'll duke it out all year long. K-State and Texas Tech, though, probably not going to be there when we talk about this same topic in 2 weeks. But can anybody make the case or try to say that K-State, what they're doing, and again, we know that they haven't played the toughest schedule yet compared to others. They're kind of in a Texas boat where you look around and say, I don't know, your schedule's still going to have some tough spots. I mean, is there any realm where you think K-State can make, 3-1 turn into 7-2 or something like that when we're talking about this halfway through the Big 12 schedule?
What I will say is you can say that about K-State's schedule and you would be accurate, but I mean, KU's played UCF and Oklahoma State of the four. Now it gets really tough for them after and soon as well, but they're also, their next two is at West Virginia and a home against Cincinnati. So you could argue that KU is kind of like K-State, where they kind of get a smooth runway at the beginning and then it will pick up. The problem is you already lost one of them to UCF. So that's where you are there. Ultimately, I think I would agree KU and Baylor are in a league of their own in comparison to K-State and Tech. I would say Tech and K-State are just kind of scrappy, right? Texas Tech plays great defense. Kansas State plays great defense. They're both tough. That's why I think both teams will grit out an NCAA tournament bid, especially with their home environments, because they're going to be able to notch quad one wins because it's so tough to win at their place. So I like both. I don't know if I like both hanging around for the Big 12 title hunt, though. I think we saw last night, when you play teams will matter, but I think you saw last night, like, Tech is not in that category. When you get blown out by that much on the road. And I would say Kansas State, they're probably going to have a night like that at some point too. Maybe when they go to Houston or when they go to KU. So K-State and Tech are so similar. And it makes sense because they're both from the Scott Drew tree, Grant McCaslin and Jerome Tang. I like Kansas State. Now, you said 2 weeks they might not be there. I say they might still, because if you beat Oklahoma State, and like you said, if you find a way to pull out one of those two road games, then I think you're right there still.
Yeah, I mean, you win 3 of the next 4 somehow, and you're at 7-2, and then you're still there. So, I mean, it's possible. I mean, K-State almost won in Ames last year.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Like, if they win one of those two road games, tough to do, probably won't happen. I think I will pick K-State to lose both. Spoiler alert. But let's say you beat Oklahoma State at home and you win one of those. So then you go 2-1. What are you? 5-2 in the league at that point. You should beat Oklahoma. You're 6-2. Then you go to Oklahoma State. Are you 7-2? Are you 7-2 in a Big 12 when you host KU? I mean,
It's possible. I think that they are capable, and I think they can go out and win one of those games at Iowa State or Houston just because of, look, I'm not totally sold on Iowa State. I'm not saying they do it, but I think that they can. And I mean, depending on how they play against Oklahoma State, there could be some momentum there. And I think it'll be a good game between them and Iowa State on Wednesday night. And that's probably a really good – that's a really good barometer for what K-State is the rest of the way, is what kind of battle they put up in Ames, because the crowd's going to be good. You're going to be facing a really solid team. How do you handle that, and what does it look like? That's going to be fascinating. That'll tell us a lot about K-State moving forward in terms of they've already taken one step up the rung in the Big 12 and, you know, overall and how we perceive them, but they could probably take another step if they go and have a really good showing in Ames. So
we talked about avoiding that bad loss that teams will have to do this year when they go to Stillwater, Morgantown. Mm-hmm. Kansas State already did that when they went to Morgantown. Luckily, fortunately, got them early. I think that was a good thing. They have to do the same thing when they go to Stillwater. We talked about that. It's kind of a trap game too, because they got to go to Stillwater 2 days before they host KU.
Yeah, and we know last year, 2 days before they hosted KU, they went and laid a dud in Fort Worth against TCU. So we'll see how it plays out. But that is a look at the Big 12. We'll have our full Big 12 power rankings up on K-State Online on Friday, so be sure to check those out. Good way to get prepped and previewed for the weekend of Big 12 action, where K-State will host Oklahoma State, and they'll try and keep themselves at least for another game in that tie at the top of the Big 12 standings. And then we'll just see what next week brings with two really tricky road trips for the Wildcats against top 25 teams. For Drew Galloway, Derek Young, I am Mason Voth. Thank you for watching and listening to the KSO Show. You can get more K-State Online coverage over at On3 or right here on the K-State Online YouTube page.